what is magic? Then there is the witch's explanation, which comes in two forms depending on the age of the witch. Older witches hardly put words to it at all, but may suspect in their hearts that the universe really doesn't know what the hell is going on and consists of a zillion, trillion, billion possibilities, and could become any one of them if a trained mind rigid with quantum certainty was inserted in the crack and twisted. That if you really had to make someone's hat explode, all you needed to do was twist into that universe where a large number of hat molecules all decide at the same time to bounce off in different directions. Younger witches, on the other hand, talk about it all the time and believe it involves crystals, mystic forces, and dancing about without your drawers on. Everyone may be right, all at the same time. That's the thing about quantum. It was early morning. Sean Ogg was on guard on the battlements of Lancre Castle, all that stood between the inmates and any mighty barbarian hordes that might be in the area. He enjoyed the military life. Sometimes he wished a small horde would attack just so he could save the day. He daydreamed of leading an army into battle and wished the king would get one. A brief scream indicated that Hodges Arg was giving his charges their morning finger. Sean ignored the noise. It was part of the background hum of the castle. He was passing the time by seeing how long he could hold his breath. He had any amount of ways of passing the time, since guard duty in Lancre involved such an awful lot of it. There was getting the nostrils really clean, that was a good one, or farting tunes, or standing on one leg. Holding his breath and counting was something he fell back on when he couldn't think of anything else and his meals hadn't been too rich in carbohydrates. There were a couple of loud creaks from the door knocker far below. There was so much rust on it now that the only way it could be coaxed into making any sound was to lift it up, which made it squeak, and then force it mightily downwards, which caused another squeak, and if the visitor was lucky, a faint thud. Sean took a deep breath and leaned over the battlements.
"Halt! Who goes there?"
he said. A ringing voice came up from below.
"It's me, Sean, your mum."
"Oh, hello, mum. Hello, Mistress Weatherwax."
"Let us in, there's a good boy."
"Friend or foe?"
"What?"
"It's what I've got to say, Mum. It's official. And then you've got to say, friend."
"I'm your mum."
"You've got to do it properly, Mum,"
said Sean in the wretched tones of one who knows he's going to lose no matter what happens next.
"Otherwise, what's the point?"
"It's going to be foe in a minute, my lad."
"Oh, Mum."
"Oh, all right. Friend, then."
"Yes, but you could just be saying that." "Let us in right now, Sean Ogg."
Sean saluted, slightly stunning himself with the butt of his spear.
"Right you are, Miss Weatherwax."
His round, honest face disappeared from view. After a minute or two, they heard the creaking of the portcullis.
"How did you do that?" said Nanny Ogg.
"Simple," said Granny. "He knows you wouldn't make his daft head explode."
"Well, I know you wouldn't too."
"No, you don't. You just know I ain't done it up to now."
Magrat had thought this sort of thing was just a joke, but it was true. The castle's great hall had one very long dining table, and she and Verence sat at either end of it. It was all to do with etiquette. The king had to sit at the head of the table, that was obvious. But if she sat on one side of him, it made them both uneasy, because they had to keep turning to talk to each other. Opposite ends and shouting was the only way. Then there was the logistics of the sideboard. Again, the easy option, them just going over and helping themselves, was out of the question. If kings went round putting their own food on their own plate, the whole system of monarchy would come crashing down. Unfortunately, this meant that service had to be by means of Mr. Spriggins, the butler, who had a bad memory, a nervous twitch and a rubber knee, and a sort of medieval elevator system that connected with the kitchen and sounded like the rattle of a tumbril. The elevator shaft was a kind of heat sink. Hot food was cold by the time it arrived. Cold food got colder. No one knew what would happen to ice cream, but it would probably involve some rewriting of the laws of thermodynamics. Also, the cook couldn't get the hang of vegetarianism. The traditional palace cuisine was heavy in artery-clogging dishes so full of saturated fats that they oozed out in great wobbly globules. Vegetables existed as things to soak up spare gravy, and were generally boiled to a uniform shade of yellow in any case. Magrat had tried explaining things to Mrs. Scorbick, the cook, but the woman's three chins wobbled so menacingly at words like vitamins, that she made an excuse to go back out of the kitchen. At the moment, she was making do with an apple. The cook knew about apples. They were big, roasted, floury things, scooped out and filled with raisins and cream. So Magrat had resorted to stealing a raw one from the apple loft. She was also plotting to find out where the carrots were kept. Verence was distantly visible behind the silver candlesticks and a pile of account books. Occasionally they looked up and smiled at each other. At least it looked like a smile, but it was a little hard to be sure at this distance. Apparently, he'd just said something. Magrat cupped her hands around her mouth.
Pardon? We need...
Sorry?
What?
What? Finally, Magrat got up and waited while Spriggins, purple in the face with the effort, moved her chair down towards Verence. She could have done it herself, but it wasn't what queens did.
We ought to have a poet laureate, said Verence, marking his place in a book. Kingdoms have to have one. They write poems for special celebrations.
Yes?
I thought perhaps Mrs. Ogg? I hear she's quite an amusing songstress.
Magrat kept a straight face.
I think she knows lots of rhymes for certain words, she said. Apparently the going rate is 4 pence a year and a butt of sack, said Verence, peering at the page. Or it may be a sack of butt.
What exactly will she have to do? Said Magrat.
It says here the role of the poet laureate is to recite poems on state occasions, said Verence.
Magrat had witnessed some of Nanny Ogg's humorous recitations, especially the ones with the gestures. She nodded gravely.
Provided, she said, and I want to be absolutely sure you understand me on this, provided she takes up her post after the wedding. Oh dear, really?
After the wedding.
Oh,
trust me.
Well, of course, if it makes you happy.
There was a commotion outside the double doors, which were flung back. Nanny Ogg and Granny Weatherwax stamped in with Sean trying to overtake them.
Oi, Mum, I'm supposed to go in first to say you it is.
We'll tell them who we are. Watch her, your majesties, said Nanny.
Blessing be upon this castle, said Granny. Magrat, there's some doctoring needs doing here.
Granny swept a candlestick and some crockery onto the floor with a dramatic motion and laid Diamanda on the table. In fact, there were several acres of table totally devoid of any obstruction, but there's no sense in making an entrance unless you're prepared to make a mess.
But I thought she was fighting you yesterday, said Magrat.
Makes no difference, said Granny. Morning, Your Majesty.
King Verence nodded. Some kings would have shouted for the guards at this point, but Verence did not, because he was sensible. This was Granny Weatherwax, and in any case the only available guard was Sean Ogg, who was trying to straighten out his trumpet. Nanny Ogg had drifted over to the sideboard. It wasn't that she was callous, but it had been a busy few hours, and there was a lot of breakfast that no one seemed to be interested in.
What happened to her? Said Magrat, inspecting the girl carefully.
Granny looked around the room. Suits of armour, shields hanging on the walls, rusty old swords and pikes. Probably enough iron in here.
She was shot by a... elf.
But, said Magrat and Verence at the same time,
don't ask questions now, got no time. Shot by an elf. Them horrible arrows of theirs. They make the mind go wandering off all by itself. Now, can you do anything?
Despite her better nature, Magrat felt a spark of righteous ire.
Oh, so suddenly I'm a witch again, when you...
Granny Weatherwax sighed.
No time for that either, she said. I'm just asking. All you have to do is say no, then I'll take her away and won't bother you again.
The quietness of her voice was so unexpected that Magrat tripped over her own anger and tried to right herself.
I wasn't saying I wouldn't. I was just...
Good.
There was a series of clangs as Nanny Ogg lifted the silver tureen lids.
Hey, they've got 3 kinds of eggs.
Well, there's no fever, said Magrat. Slow pulse, eyes unfocused. Sean?
Yes, Miss Queen?
Boiled, scrambled and fried. That's what I call posh.
Run down to my cottage and bring back all the books you can find. I'm sure I read something about this once, Granny. Sean? Sean paused halfway to the door.
Yes, Miss Queen?
On your way out, stop off in the kitchens and ask them to boil up a lot of water. We can start by getting the wound clean, at any rate. But look, elves...
I'll let you get on with it, then, said Granny, turning away. Can I have a word with you, Your Majesty? There's something downstairs you ought to see.
I shall need some help, said Magrat.
Nanny'll do it.
That's me,
said Nanny, indistinctly, spraying crumbs.
What are you eating?
Fried egg and ketchup sandwich, said Nanny happily.
You better get the cook to boil you, too, said Magrat, rolling up her sleeves. Go and see her. She looked at the wound. And see if she's got any mouldy bread. The basic unit of wizardry is the order, or the college, or, of course, the university. The basic unit of witchcraft is the witch, but the basic continuous unit, as has already been indicated, is the cottage. A witch's cottage is a very specific architectural item. It is not exactly built, but put together over the years as the areas of repair join up, like a sock made entirely of darns. The chimney twists like a corkscrew. The roof is thatch so old that small but flourishing trees are growing in it. The floors are switchbacks. It creaks at night like a tea clipper in a gale. If at least two walls aren't shored up with bulks of timber, then it's not a true witch's cottage at all, but merely the home of some daft old bat who reads tea leaves and talks to her cat. Cottages tend to attract similar kinds of witches. It's natural. Every witch trains up one or two young witches in their life, and when in the course of mortal time the cottage becomes vacant, it's only sense for one of them to move in. Magrat's cottage traditionally housed thoughtful witches who noticed things and wrote things down. Which herbs were better than others for headaches, fragments of old stories, odds and ends like that. There were a dozen books of tiny handwriting and drawings, the occasional interesting flower or unusual frog pressed carefully between the pages. It was a cottage of questioning witches, research witches. Eye of what newt? What species of ravined salt sea shark? It's all very well a potion calling for love in idleness, but which of the 37 common plants called by that name in various parts of the continent was actually meant? The reason that Granny Weatherwax was a better witch than Magrat was that she knew that in witchcraft it didn't matter a damn which one it was, or even if it was a piece of grass. The reason that Magrat was a better doctor than Granny was that she thought it did. The coach slowed to a halt in front of the barricade across the road. The bandit chieftain adjusted his eye patch. He had two good eyes, but people respect uniforms. Then he strolled towards the coach.
"Morning, Jim. What do we get today, then?"
This could be difficult," said the coachman. "There's a handful of wizards, and a dwarf, and an ape."
He rubbed his head and winced.
"Yes, definitely an ape. Not, and I think I should make this clear, any other kind of man-shaped thing with hair on."
"You're right, Jim. I've had this lot ever since Aunt Morpork. Don't talk to me about dried frog pills."
The bandit chief raised his eyebrows.
"All right, I won't."
He knocked on the coach door. The window slid down.
"I wouldn't like you to think of this as a robbery," he said. "I'd like you to think of it more as a colourful anecdote you might enjoy telling your grandchildren about."
A voice from within said,
"That's him! He stole my horse!"
A wizard's staff poked out. The chieftain saw the knob on the end.
"Now then," he said pleasantly, "I know the rules. Wizards aren't allowed to use magic against civilians except in genuine, life-threatening situations."
There was a burst of octarine light.
"Actually, it's not a rule," said Ridcully. "It's more a guideline."
He turned to Ponder Stibbons.
"Interest in use of Stacklady's morphic resonator here, I hope you noticed?"
Ponder looked down. The chieftain had been turned into a pumpkin, although in accordance with the rules of universal humour, he still had his hat on.
"And now," said Ridcully, "I'd be obliged if all you fellas hiding behind the rocks and things would just step out where I can see you." "Very good. Mr. Stibbons, you and the librarian just pass around with the hat, please."
"But this is a robbery," said the coachman, "and you've turned him into a fruit."
"A vegetable," said Ridcully. "Anyway, it'll wear off in a couple of hours."
"And I'm owed a horse," said Casanunda.
The bandits paid up, reluctantly handing over money to Ponder, and reluctantly but very quickly handing over money to the librarian.
"There's almost $300, sir," said Ponder.
"And a horse, remember? In fact, there were two horses. I'd forgotten about the other horse until now."
"Capital. We're in pocket on the trip. So if these gentlemen would just remove the roadblock, we'll be on our way."
"In fact, there was a third horse I've just remembered about." "This isn't what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be robbed," shouted the coachman.
Ridcully pushed him off the board. "We're on holiday," he said. The coach rattled away. There was a distant cry of, "And four horses, don't forget," before it rounded a bend. The pumpkin developed a mouth.
"Have they gone?" "Yes, boss. Roll me into the shade, will you? And no one say anything about this ever again. Has anyone got any dried frog pills?"
Verence the Second respected witches. They'd put him on the throne. He was pretty certain of that, although he couldn't quite work out how it had happened. And he was in awe of Granny Weatherwax. He followed her meekly towards the dungeons, hurrying to keep up with her long stride.
What's happening, Mistress Weatherwax?"
"Got something to show you."
"You mentioned elves."
"That's right."
"I thought they were a fairy story."
"Well?"
"I mean, you know, an old wives' tale."
"So?"
Granny Weatherwax seemed to generate a gyroscopic field. If you started out off balance, she saw to it that you remained there. He tried again.
"Don't exist, is what I'm trying to say."
Granny reached a dungeon door. It was mainly age-blackened oak, but with a large barred grill occupying some of the top half.
"In there."
Verence peered inside.
"Good grief."
"I got Sean to unlock it. I don't reckon anyone else saw us come in. Don't tell anyone. If the dwarfs and the trolls find out, they'll tear the walls apart to get him out."
"Why? To kill him?"
"Of course. They've got better memories than humans."
"Well, what am I supposed to do with it?"
"Just keep it locked up. How should I know? I've got to think."
Verence peered in again at the elf. It was lying curled up in the centre of the floor.
"That's an elf, but it's just a long, thin human with a foxy face, more or less. I thought they were supposed to be beautiful."
"Oh, they are when they're conscious," said Granny, waving a hand vaguely. "They project when people look at them, they see beauty, they see something they want to please. They can look just like you want them to look. It's called glamour. You can tell when elves are around. People act funny. They stop thinking clear. Don't you know anything?"
"I thought elves were just stories, like the Tooth Fairy."
"Nothing funny about the Tooth Fairy," said Granny. "Very hard-working woman. I'll never know how she manages with the ladder and everything. No, elves are real. Oh, drat, listen."
She turned and held up a finger.
"Feudal system, right?"
"What?"
"Feudal system. Pay attention. Feudal system. King on top, then barons and whatnot, then everyone else. Witches off to one side a bit,"
Granny added diplomatically. She steepled her fingers.
"Feudal system, like them pointy buildings heathen kings get buried in. Understand?"
"Yes."
"Right. That's how the elves see things, yes? When they get into a world, everyone else is on the bottom. Slaves. Worse than slaves. Worse than animals, even. They take what they want, and they want everything. But worst of all, the worst bit is, they read your mind. They hear what you think, and in self-defence, you think what they want. Glamour. And it's barred windows at night, and food out for the fairies, and turning round three times before you talks about them, and horseshoes over the door."
"I thought that sort of thing was, you know,"
the king grinned sickly,
"folklore."
"Of course it's folklore, you stupid man."
"I do happen to be king, you know,"
said Verence reproachfully.
"You stupid king, your majesty."
"Thank you."
"I mean, it doesn't mean it's not true. Maybe it gets a little muddled over the years. Folks forget details. They forget why they do things. Like the horseshoe thing."
"I know my granny had one over the door," said the king.
"There you are. Nothing to do with its shape. But if you lives in an old cottage and you're poor, it's probably the nearest bit of iron with holes in it that you can find."
"Ah."
"The thing about elves is they've got no... begins with M."
Granny snapped her fingers irritably.
"Manners?"
Right, but no.
Muscle? Mucus? Mystery?
No. Means like seeing the other person's point of view."
Verence tried to see the world from a Granny Weatherwax perspective, and suspicion dawned.
"Empathy?"
"Right, none at all. Even a good hunter, can feel for the quarry. That's what makes them a good hunter. Elves aren't like that. They're cruel for fun. And they can't understand things like mercy. They can't understand that anything apart from themselves might have feelings. They laugh a lot, especially if they've caught a lonely human or a dwarf or a troll. Trolls might be made out of rock, Your Majesty, but I'm telling you that a troll is your brother compared to elves. In the head, I mean.
But why don't I know all this?
Glamour. Elves are beautiful. They've got, she spat the word, style. Beauty. Grace. That's what matters. If cats looked like frogs, we'd realise what nasty, cruel little bastards they are. Style. That's what people remember. They remember the glamour. All the rest of it, all the truth of it, becomes old wives' tales.
Magrat's never said anything about them. Granny hesitated.
Magrat doesn't know too much about elves, she said. She ain't even a young wife yet. They're not something that gets talked about a lot these days. It's not good to talk about them. It's better if everyone forgets about them. They come when they're called. Not called like, cooey. Called inside people's heads. It's enough for people just to want them to be here.
Verence waved his hands in the air. I'm still learning about monarchy, he said. I don't understand this stuff.
You don't have to understand. You're a king. Listen, you know about weak places in the world? Where it joins other worlds?
No.
There's one up on the moor. That's why the dancers were put up around it. They're a kind of wall.
Ah.
But sometimes the barriers between worlds is weaker, see? Like tides. At circle time.
Ah.
And if people act stupidly, even the dancers can't keep the gateway shut. Because where the world's thin, even the wrong thought can make the link.
Oh.
Verence felt the conversation had orbited back to that area where he could make a contribution.
Stupidly, he said.
Calling them. Attracting them.
Ah. So, what do I do?
Just go on raining. I think we're safe. They can't get through. I've stopped the girls, so there'll be no more channeling. You keep this one firmly under lock and key, and don't tell Magrat. No sense in worrying her, is there? Something came through, but I'm keeping an eye on it.
Granny rubbed her hands together in grim satisfaction.
I think I've got it sorted, she said.
She blinked. She pinched the bridge of her nose.
What did I just say? She said.
You said you thought you'd got it sorted, said the king.
Granny Weatherwax blinked.
That's right, she said. I said that. Yes, and I'm in the castle. Yes, aren't I? Yes.
Are you all right, Mistress Weatherwax?
Asked the king, his voice taut with sudden worry.
Fine, fine, fine. In the castle. And the children are all right, too?
Sorry?
She blinked again.
What?
You don't look well.
Granny screwed up her face and shook her head.
Yes, the castle. I'm me. You're you. Githa's upstairs with Magrat. That's right.
She focused on the king.
Just a bit of overtiredness there. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about at all.
Nanny Ogg looked doubtfully at Magrat's preparation.
A mouldy bread poultice don't sound very magical to me, she said.
Goody Wemper used to swear by it, but I don't know what we can do about the coma.
Magrat thumbed hopefully through the crackling ancient pages. Her ancestral witches had written things down pretty much as they occurred to them, so that quite important spells and observations would be interspersed with comments about the state of their feet.
It says here, the smally, pointy stones sometimes found are known as elf shot, being the heads of elf arrows from times past.
That's all I can find. And there's a drawing. But I've seen these little stones around too.
Oh, there's lots of them, said Nanny, bandaging dear Amanda's shoulder. Dig them up all the time in my garden.
But elves don't shoot people. Elves are good.
Oh, they're probably just fired at Esme and the girl in fun, like.
But look, dear, you're going to be queen. It's an important job. You look after the king now, and let me and Esme look after other stuff. Being queen? It's all tapestry and walking round in unsuitable dresses. I know Granny. She doesn't like anything that's got style and grace. She's so sour.
I dare say she's got her reasons, said Nanny amiably. Well, that's got the girl patched up. What should we do with her now?
"'We've got dozens of spare bedrooms,' said Magrat, "'and they're all ready for guests. "'We can put her in one of them.' "'Nanny?'
"'Yes?'
"'Would you like to be a bridesmaid?'
"'Not really, dear. "'Bit old for that sort of thing,' Nanny hovered. "'There isn't anything you need to ask me, though, is there?'
"'What do you mean?
"'What with your mum being dead "'and you having no female relatives and everything?'
Magrat still looked puzzled.
"'After the wedding is what I'm hinting about,' said Nanny.
"'Oh, that! No, most of that's being done by a caterer. The cook here isn't much good at canapes and things.' Nanny looked carefully at the ceiling.
"'And what about after that?' she said. "'If you catch my meaning.'
"'I'm getting a lot of girls in to do the clearing up. "'Look, don't worry. I've thought of everything. "'I wish you and Granny wouldn't treat me as if I didn't know anything.' Nanny coughed.
"'You a man?' she said. "'Been around a bit, I expect. "'Been walking out with dozens of young women, I've no doubt.
"'Why do you say that? "'I don't think he has. "'Fools don't have much of a private life, "'and of course he's been very busy since he's been king. "'He's a bit shy with girls.' Nanny gave up.
"'Oh, well,' she said. "'I'm sure you'll work it out as you—'
Granny and the king reappeared.
"'How's the girl?' said Granny.
"'We took out the arrow and cleaned up the wound anyway,' said Magrat. "'But she won't wake up. Best if she stays here.'
"'You sure?' said Granny. "'She needs keeping an eye on. I've got a spare bedroom.'
"'She shouldn't be moved,' said Magrat briskly.
"'They've put their mark on her,' said Granny. "'You sure you know how to deal with it?'
"'I do know it's quite a nasty wound,' said Magrat, briskly.
"'I ain't exactly thinking about the wound,' said Granny. "'She's been touched by them, is what I mean. "'She—'
"'I'm sure I know how to deal with a sick person,' said Magrat, "'and I'm not totally stupid, you know.'
"'She's not to be left alone,' Granny persisted.
"'There'll be plenty of people around,' said Verence. "'The guests start arriving tomorrow.'
"'Being alone isn't the same as not having other people around,' said Granny.
"'This is a castle, Granny.'
"'Right. Well, we won't keep you, then,' said Granny. "'Come, Githa.'
Nanny Og helped herself to an elderly lamb chop from under one of the silver covers and waved it vaguely at the royal pair. "'Have fun,' she said, "'in so far as that's possible.'
"'Githa!
Coming!' Elves are wonderful. They provoke wonder. Elves are marvellous. They cause marvels. Elves are fantastic. They create fantasies. Elves are glamorous. They project glamour. Elves are enchanting. They weave enchantment. Elves are terrific. They beget terror. The thing about words is that meanings can twist just like a snake, and if you want to find snakes, look for them behind words that have changed their meaning. No one ever said, elves are nice. Elves are bad.
"'Well, that's it,' said Nanny Og, as the witches walked out over the castle's drawbridge. "'Well done, Esme.'
"'It ain't over,' said Granny Weatherwax.
"'You said yourself they can't get through now. "'No one else round here is going to try any magic at the stones, that's sure enough.'
"'Yes, but it'll be circle time for another day or so yet. "'Anything could happen.'
"'That dear Amanda girl's out of it, and you've put the wind up the others,' said Nanny Og, tossing the lambone into the dry moat. "'Ain't no one else going to call them, I know that.'
"'There's still the one in the dungeon.'
"'You want to get rid of it?' said Nanny. "'I'll send our Sean to King Ironfounderson up at Copperhead, if you like. "'Or I could hop on the old broomstick myself and go and drop the word to the Mountain King. "'The dwarves and trolls will take it off our hands like a shot, no more problem.'
"'Granny ignored this.
"'There's something else,' she said, "'something we haven't thought of. "'She'll still be looking for a way.'